This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
So, what is the premise behind the play?
It's basically just some of the days in their life about how they go on and then living their life. You know, Norman goes to work, brings back donuts under his shirt. Lucian just kind of stays home. Barry's father comes over one day and beats him to a pulp. And Arnold just runs around with rugs, basically. And that's all. Jackie, who is the caretaker,
rugs.
Yes, rugs.
He steals the rugs
and Wheaties.
He has a thing.
So you've gone from blankets in the last performance
to rugs.
Rugs, Wheaties, and heads of lettuce.
I'm hoping to get a.
Oh my!
What? Hold on. What was that?
I'm hoping to get a ShamWow on the next.
Oh. Wow. We in no way endorse ShamWow. What? I don't want to say
I
sure.
Do.
Oh, okay, I'm
okay.
Sorry.
I'm trying to get a free one.
So the show just basically follows the guys' lives and what they kind of the struggles they go through. And Jackie kind of starts. What's happening is, I don't want to give it away, but Jackie is kind of moving on in her life and is coming to a crossroads and where she needs to go as far as taking care of the man and taking care of her life. And so that's kind of how the whole story kind of pivots around that. Yeah, it's pretty deep.
Now. There's always three shows that go on here. One that's on the air, one that goes on in there, and whatever's on the back patio that I get to sit now watch on screen in here.
Oh, nice.
Since you are the new one to the group, you get the question I ask them all the time here.
Oh, that's a good question.
Why staged or ink?
Several reasons, actually. I met Mark several years ago working on another show, and I've really always wanted to work with him. And when he started his theater, I love doing theater around Clear Lake, but he does a lot of really great shows that touch on really important issues and just kind of out-of-the-box shows, and I really wanted to be a part of that. So this was a perfect opportunity. And if I can tell the story, I was supposed to just be a little walk-on role, and I showed up the first night for rehearsals, and he's like, well, I've rearranged, and now you're playing this part, and I'm looking through my script going, but I'm just supposed to walk on.
You walked on, but you never left. That's the problem.
Okay, I love it.
And it goes back to saying, be careful when you come to stage door because you'll be pulled in for everything that we need.
But we love you, Elaine. We love you so much.
I'm now a part of the cult.
That's right.
it's a cult
one
now.
Of us.
Yeah, it's just like a cult. You're David Koresh, I guess.
Oh, all right.
Yum.
Thank God I have no fires in Pasadena.
Hey, it hasn't been boring yet. So.
There you go. It's fun.
I guess it's a good thing that I don't have any talent because then you guys will try and corral me up there.
Well, we have some talentless people on stage. That's our problem. Excuse me. Playing a mentally challenged person is a stretch for me. Okay? I have to talk slow. It's true.
He usually just plays himself.
Thank you, Link. Thanks. You feel the love across the table. That's nice.
It's there. It's there.
No, stop right there.
Okay, let's see. If we're going to go with all this kind of weird stuff, the trademark, is there corn dogs?
No.
Dang it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
No, I'm stopping by Kroger's.
I'm actually in my underwear, though. Yeah. Again,
you had to bring up the underwear.
His underwear.
Oh, okay.
You had to bring up the underwear.
Well, now we've got Wes interested in going.
Yeah.
What was the address to get to there again?
284 Pasadena Town Square Mall.
It's one thing. If you go to enough of these performances, you see a reoccurring theme of corn dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I was so surprised when I went to see You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, that when Charlie Brown sat down to open his lunch, I'm surprised a corn dog didn't come.
Well, there was some there were some corn dogs on stage, but it wasn't the kind you eat. So. I'm gonna put it like that.
Wow.
Love you guys. Love you guys. Good times. So.
See, we don't get the bitchiness with Theater Suburbia. They're too uptight.
See, yeah. Take that.
And if you're hearing that. If you're hearing me say that, Judy, deny it. Okay, so.
And we got a phone call coming in from Judy now.
Theater Suburbia, deny that.
Oh. Judy, just go back to stroking your pussy and we'll.
Can you? Okay.
Yeah, Blake's checking the
He was referring to her kitty cat.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I can see how.
Yeah, Judy's pussy was in love with Jimmy for a while, and then they kind of...
They parted ways.
Yeah.
And we had to retire Judy's email address.
Oh, I still remember the first time we started using those jokes there, Mark called up and said, I about drove off the road.
Yeah. I almost wrecked the first time I was listening and that came across the radio. Thank you, Dario, for reaching across and grabbing the road.
Trusty steed all the time. There you go.
I'm just going to back off of that one.
Okay. Going back to this. All right, Stage Door Inc., for those of you who have not been listening the past several months when we've had them on here, this is the theater in the mall.
Yep.
Yes.
Mysterious.
Dun, dun, dun.
If you can find us.
No one knows how we really got there. We just appeared.
Theater of the mall.
Thumb? Is that what? Theater. Okay.
No, I just thought that came across my mind doing a different version of Phantom of the Opera. Phantom of the Mall.
Well, he is
but
going.
That is the newest one going on Broadway, which is the Phantom Goes to Coney Island.
Not the hot dog place. It's not that much fun, people.
There
it's
better not. Be a hot dog or corn dog involved in the Phantom of the Opera Goes to Coney Island.
Yeah, so.
Oh, God.
Missed that boat.
Okay, I'm sorry. My mind is wrapped now around the Phantom of the Mall. I can see someone climbing the top of the children's tower thing that's outside the theater there in the Phantom mask and a cape.
I'll do it.
To start singing?
I would do it.
I have the cape.
Okay, go backing up back to the boys next door.
All right, well, I just had a mental image that will stay with me the rest of the night now.
You're going to need a minute or a cigarette.
Should I, like, not?
I'm going to need 3 minutes and a cigarette.
Okay.
So, it is in the Pasadena Town Square Center.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for those of you who are, like Jimmy, who are scared to leave the Montrose, it's outside the Loop.
In Pasadena.
They do have GPS now that goes that far now, I think. Yeah. We have the technology.
Yeah, but is Pasadena actually registered on the map?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know. I have never... I don't, yeah.
The mall registers,
never,
too.
It's a little speck. Yeah.
That occasionally blows up.
Yes, please.
So, now this... What all we have coming up after this?
We actually got auditions coming up on Sunday and Monday, happening for Over the River and Through the Woods, which opens on July 31st, I believe. And we also have Little Shop of Horrors coming up that will open on September 11th. Nice. And then we have Rocky Horror, which opens on October 24th.
I think so.
And we have Nutcrackers opening on November 27th. There we go.
Yeah, okay. Black Friday.
Did he say Nutcrackers or Nutcrackers?
Nutcrackers.
What happens when the nuns take over public access television?
Okay, but I was just making sure that I heard that right.
Yeah, they wear the black. So
the black
I'm showing up with that with a nun's outfit, by the way.
Come on.
That's awesome.
You may get there and be surprised. Maybe all men in that cast.
I'm going to come wearing the sparkly nuns habit we have.
Oh, and traditionally, I did change some things in the script like we always do.
Yes.
Jackie is supposed to be Jack is the original character mm-hmm. name. We made her a Jackie.
That's a twist.
Or better known as
Jackie.
Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
And nice. Therapist was... Yeah, okay, the therapist is the... I'm sorry.
Yes.
You just said Jack, and I was trying to remember back, but when Dario told me, I'm looking on Wikipedia trying to figure out what this thing is, I'm going... And I was looking through the things, and I'm going, okay. I tried guessing the characters.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
On that. And like I said, I had it wrong. I had Zach for the therapist.
That was the original.
See, that was the typecasting based off of the sweater.
Exactly.
You're constantly in therapy in the shows now.
Yes. Actually, I am.
Undertones.
So...
You know, whether he's sitting in a therapist chair on Sorted Lives or sitting on top of the doghouse reflecting on life, he's in therapy. I was thinking Mark for his role.
Or stranded in the drive-in. I was thinking about that.
But that little meme was very therapeutic, wasn't it?
Huh?
In Greece, you got need.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, being knees.
Twice.
That's so the jogging scene.
That's and the jogging scene.
Okay, moving back to Boys Next Door. Going back to that. Stop it.
He keeps going back to the Boys Next Door for some reason.
I'm just
I don't
trying to go back.
This.
I just want to get lost.
Hey, we still have 3 hours to kill, so.
Oh, boy.
And they're on for the next 2 hours.
Oh, okay,
wow, this could go crazy.
It's musical number time.
The Boys Next Door.
That's right.
It could happen. It could happen.
Don't say it too loud, Andrew Lloyd
Webber,
when you're trying to do it.
Don't do it, Andrew.
That was a shared, like...
Don't do it, Andrew. Don't do it. Back away from the piano. We thank you for Coney Island. That's enough.
Now, did you watch his reality show?
Oh,
Andrew Lloyd Webber's?
He has a reality show?
What? Yeah.
He did, actually, two of them. It was in British. It was on the BBC America. He's casting for Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Oh, let it die, Andrew. Let it die. Let it go.
And so they did two. They did two of them. One was for casting Joseph, called Any Dream Will Do. And then they followed that up with the one for There's Something About Maria.
Mm-hmm. How do you solve a problem like Maria?
Okay,
yeah.
Or something. I mean, it was on BBC America, and it was a weird. It was like American Idol gone gayer.
Wow. You mean Ryan Seacrest went across the pond?
Is that possible?
Well, let's put it this way. Graham Norton was the host.
Oh. Ah. Well,
was the MC. Andrew Lloyd Webber was there, and the guy...
Clay Aiken?
No.
No.
They're all British.
Simon Cowell?
Barrymore, the guy on...
Yeah, draw
a
blank.
Is that science fiction show on there? Torchwood.
No.
But no, it was the weirdest of.
They it sounds out, right.
They sing. They I mean, they go through different singing performances, and then at the end, there's two left, and have to do a final sing off, and then Andrew Lloyd Webber decides which one he's going to save, and then they send the last person off by. He's standing there, has to sing some song from Joseph, and they're all wearing this tie-dye, looks like painter's jackets. It's supposed to be the Technicolor dream coat. And so at the end of his singing this final song, the other Josephs come up there and take the jacket off from him.
It's like Survivor.
Kind of.
But musicals.
Okay. Yes. It's
wow.
Instead of extinguishing the torch, they remove
the Technicolor dream coat. That makes sense.
Walk off stage.
Wow.
The walk of shame.
Yes. Over the top.
Jerry Bruckheimer's made it to musicals, everybody. Can't wait for CSI the Musical.
They're coming out with L.A., so that's probably next.
Wow. I can't wait. Put it on my calendar.
Alrighty then.
They're putting Chris O'Donnell on TV, so.
Oh, Lord, help us.
Well, maybe he'll wear the Robin outfit.
Oh.
Once.
So, Boys Next Door opens June 19th. That was yesterday, just by the way.
And I didn't go because I was told I'm not supposed to come to the first performances anymore.
That's true.
That's right.
That's very true.
Especially tonight. Yes. And tonight.
Oh. I heard it now. I got that.
Stage manager. Let's just blame him.
I'm not blaming the stage manager.
I don't think so.
I'm the executive director, officially blaming the technical director for some of these mistakes.
His name is Dario Faili. Contact him at 2284 Passing Towns Square Mall. Dario Faili at stageinc.com.
Okay, we let him be the main guy who speaks.
There you go. So that's nice. Every show is different. So
Chris
really,
doesn't know what to say anymore.
It doesn't matter. Every show is different. Like today, I mean, anything can happen
that's
anytime.
The beauty of live theater.
Live theater at its finest, America.
It's live community theater. It's not.
That's right.
You know, you're not going to a theater where you're sitting with hundreds of people.
No. We
wish.
And tens of people.
Hey, now watch it.
maximum seating is 60 people, so it's
90.
90.
90. Yeah. It looks like 60. And we've had 60, but it's really 90.
Yeah, we have yet to sell that out.
That's okay. One day. Okay.
We're working.
We'll take out seats, and we'll get.
That's right.
Take out the ones that really fall down low. Okay. I don't know what my fat ass in it is. It makes it go low.
No, because I'm... Yeah, they go low on me, too. That's what they like.
I don't have that problem.
Polka-doke.
Who was the first person to say that I don't have that problem?
What?
The one that's not going to see college?
Oh.
I missed something.
Boys Next Door, everybody. Happening right now. Get tickets now. They're going fast.
There's
going
to be an easy crushing death here. You know, people pay extra for that. Some people do.
I don't pay for it. I'll just come in and watch anyway.
Wow. Okay.
You were saying something, Zach?
No. Boys Next Door happening this weekend. The next 3 weekends coming around. Tickets available now.
See, we need to have him for the pledge drive.
There you go.
He's trying to do that subliminal, you know. Right. During the daylight time, they're going, call it out. 713-526-573. Call now. Pledge your support.
So he's trying to do the subliminal. You
know, uh-huh.
You can. Yeah. Periodically through the show.
Whisper softer. You're going down. Too loud. So.
Are we whispering now? Is that the new thing to do?
Now all the inmates in jail are trying to go, the damn reception's going again.
I'm still here. I'm alive.
Okay.
Oh, goodness.
Now, Stage Door Inc. is 501c3.
That's right.
Always looking for contributions.
Always.
They are down in the Pasadena Town Square Mall. You can catch them online at stagedoorinc.com. And this Boys Next Door is on for a month.
Yes.
Oh, we also have a birthday party, birthday bash going on the 25th of July.
June.
Sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. They both start with J and U. I'm sorry.
We're going to stone them afterwards.
English is my second language, so you need to back off. So, June 25th, Stage will actually turn 1 year old on June 6th. CA Stage Door, we're 1 year old.
Yay.
We're crawling, everybody. Yay.
What show were they doing 1 year ago?
The Foreigner with Jeff Coletta, everybody. Featuring.
And Justin Nicholson.
Featuring. That's right. That's that's tradition here in our village. Okay, so.
Tradition!
Shopping cart again. We love the shopping cart. We actually have a contest going on our set. We actually included a prop piece from every show from the year in the set. So it's kind of fun if patrons have been there all year long to kind of identify all the props that are on the set and see what you can do. It's kind of a scavenger hunt of sorts.
And it's kind of, there are some things for shows that we're hoping to happen. That
there's homages to. Yeah, there's homages.
So this one is kind of obvious.
Yeah.
It's very obvious.
It's in a 2x4 frame.
It's pretty blatant. It's on the front door, too. So. Good times. Okay, so.
I have a fighting chance. I guess. Since you're only a year old, that's 12 performances.
That's right.
9 a year.
I've called. Oh, 9?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
The only shows you've missed is The Foreigner and Suicidal. You've seen every show since.
You haven't missed anything.
No,
haven't missed anything.
I did miss his.
Same Time Next Year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was the best show.
That
was the best show.
He watched one show but got distracted. And
that's true.
It.
But I saw Sorted Lives twice with all averages.
Oh, okay. So that, I'll thank you for your patronage. That works. That works.
That was a good show, by the way. Everybody.
Why are you whispering again?
Because it was a good show.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are y'all in the room still? I'm sorry. Dang it, these microphones.
I have headsets on.
That's why you like that show so much. It was just him and one other performer.
Excuse me. I wasn't complaining and she wasn't complaining either. Let's just get that straight. Okay.
But we haven't seen her since.
Hey, it happened. Oh, it happened.
It did take.
And it happened a whole month after that one, too. Let me tell you what. Just letting you know, Houston.
Kim, for you out there listening, he's in here talking stuff again.
I love you, Kim.
It didn't happen.
Love you.
So, the Boys Next Store opens June 19th.
That was yesterday, but tickets still available. That's right.
Rabble,
love you.
Rabble.
Calm down, Zach.
We actually have 2 complimentary tickets to offer to come see the show. So,
okay.
Be great.
Well, anything else we want to add on?
I think I said enough.
Are you sure?
Still taking any...
I was pretty quiet today.
Positions for the Academy?
We do have a couple of spots still open. If anyone is interested, they can contact the theater and find out.
The Summer Academy is currently running until I'm like surround sound stereo.
No, I thought something else, but I'm not going to say.
Well, the radio adds 10 pounds. We gave you 3 mics.
I thought it was 15.
There's an explicative that I can't say on air. Our Summer Academy runs until July 18th.
See, that's the problem. Everybody enjoys that sign too much. It tells them the 7 dirty words.
And I got the magic button
right here.
Back to the
Summer Youth Academy.
Is there more than 7, or is it just...
Milan happening on July 17th.
Count, count.
Well, no, not enough. It's like there's more than just those?
Or? No, those are the main 7 that you...
He really is amazed by that.
Link, get away from the words.
I didn't know why that one
is
and
that
one. Is
it lined up or anything?
You can say tits.
Oh, you can't? Okay. Why is it on there?
Thank God.
I have a pencil. I could scratch it out.
when the original 7 came on, that was considered... You couldn't say tits.
Well,
but
what
it's
happens?
Become more acceptable. We'd
say. I mean, honestly, someone
don't say it, Justin.
Like, someone says like tip, tip for tat.
I'm just
you know?
Saying. This is my one say, shot.
Yeah, there's 2 of the 7.
I'm like, why would you? Why would you?
I think Link just wants to say something bad.
He wants to say something dirty, Link.
I'm not saying something bad. I just.
No, Link. Okay. You do realize that if you say one of those bad words, then Wes is going to spank you and he's going to enjoy the hell.
I'm not trying to say a bad word. I'm just trying to.
Wait a minute. Where's my belt?
To wrap my.
I'm getting my belt right now.
Okay, back to the Children's Academy.
Well, he's really looking for his belt.
Mulan.
Wait, there's another guy with a belt.
For our Chinese American friends, opens on July 6th. Okay, I'm scared now.
I didn't say anything. At least let me say something first.
Okay, I'm scared.
Okay.
He's behind me.
Okay, so Children's Academy.
The show is actually July 16th, 17th, and 18th, and that's totally produced by our production team and all acted by kids, and they are going through a rigorous rehearsal schedule. Well, not all. Okay, not all, but all the kids that signed up are in the show, and they're so cute.
yeah, they're cute.
Kids, and they're fun. They sing loud, and it's cute. They dance around. So that show's happening on July 16th, 17th, and the 18th. Five shows going on.
Jimmy must have heard about the belt. He's got a grin on his face and showed up.
Uh-oh.
I'm innocent.
Link, you're not going to make it out, buddy. But you're not going to make it out.
I just got to choose my words.
You said
he
was going to make it home.
Leave him behind.
Brian, you're gonna.
Oh, how are you gonna get home?
So no kids left behind. One kid left behind.
Oh, he's not a kid. He's 19.
Oh, true.
Prime beef.
You're advertising his adult.
I'm 36, actually.
Not right.
I feel like I'm 36, actually.
Don't lie to me. I'll hang you up. I'll hang you up on the wall.
Okay, so Boys Next Door happening this weekend. 90 seats still available for every show. We're a 501c organization taking donations.
C3,
I'm sorry, taking donations. So.
And how do we get in touch with Stage Door?
You can give us a ring-a-ding-ding at 832-582-7606 or catch us on the web at www.stagedoorinc.com.
And you got a couple of terms for that?
No, I don't. Sorry.
Well, what we'll do is we're going to play a little music until we regroup and figure out what in the hell we're doing next.
Awesome.
Let's see. Third caller at 713-526-5738 gets a pair of tickets to see the Insanity in Pasadena.
Good luck.
Hey. Can I call? What
music are you playing?
We'll play a little more something upbeat. I'll figure it out.
713-526-5738.
One of the few times you can call here and we're not going to ask you for money.
Yeah.
I know, right?
Free tickets.
Here we go.
Thank you. boots are being polished. Trumpeters clean their horns. Chains and locks forged. The crusade has begun. Once again, flags of Christ are unfurled in the dawn, and cries of soul saviors sing apocalyptic on airwaves. Citizens, good citizens all, parade into voting booths and in self-righteous sanctity X away our right to life. I do not believe it, some, that the vote is an end. I fear even more, it is just a beginning. So I must make assessment, look to you and ask, where will you be when they come? They will not come a mob rolling through the streets, but quickly and quietly move into our homes to remove the evil, the queerness, the faggotry from their midst. They will not come clothed in brown and swastikas or bearing chests heavy with gleaming crosses. The time and need for such ruses are over. They will come in business suits to buy your homes and bring bodies to fill your jobs. They will come in robes to rehabilitate and white coats to subjugate. And where will you be when they come? Where will we all be when they come? And they will come. They will come because we are defined as opposite, perverse, and we are perverse. Every time we watched a queer hassled in the streets and said nothing, it was an act of perversion. Every time we lied about the boyfriend or girlfriend at coffee break, it was an act of perversion. Every time we heard, I don't mind gays, but why must they be blatant, and said nothing, it was an act of perversion. Every time we let a lesbian mother lose her child and did not fill the courtrooms, it was an act of perversion. Every time we let straights make out in our bars while we couldn't touch because of the laws, it was an act of perversion. Every time we put on the proper clothes to go to a family wedding and left our lovers at home, it was an act of perversion. Every time we heard, who I go to bed with is my personal choice, it's personal, not political, and said nothing, it was an act of perversion. Every time we let straight relatives bury our dead and push our lovers away, it was an act of perversion. And they will come for the perverts. And it won't matter if you're homosexual, not a faggot, lesbian, not a dyke, gay, not queer. It won't matter if you own your own business, have a good job, or an SSI. It won't matter if you're black, Chicano, Native American, Asian, or white. It won't matter if you're from New York or Los Angeles, Galveston, or Sioux Falls. It won't matter if you're butch or femme, not into roles, monogamous, non-monogamous. It won't matter if you're Catholic, Baptist, atheist, Jewish, or MCC. They will come. They will come to the cities and to the land, to your front rooms and in your closets. They will come for the perverts. And where will you be when they come?
Hey, Sarah.
All right. Stupid mic. Let me switch back over to this one.
Okay.
All right, there we go.
Okay.
All right. Well, we had a nice little musical interlude there.
Yeah, can that's kind of
musical prelude, but
yeah, that's
talk about what we played because the middle part was is pretty important.
Yeah, well, we started off the set. Let's see, where did I go? Heart of Glass by Blondie, and then Que Sera Mi Vida, and that was by the Gibson Brothers.
And in the middle of that, we had some electronic music, only because it was done by a queer.
Yeah.
And over that, we had the late, great Pat Parker's reading her poem, Where Will You Be When They Come? This was a poem that we played a lot in the early days of the show, when things were not so friendly between the gays and police department and the legislature and all of that. So Pat Parker was a poet, lesbian poet from Houston, who gained national recognition for her activist poetry. She died a few years, actually about 10 years ago now, of breast cancer. And if you heard that and you responded to that, you know what a treasure that we've lost just because of breast cancer.
Yeah.
That's why it is vitally important. That's one of the many reasons it's vitally important that gay men stand up and help support breast cancer research, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you found something.
Yes, I did.
Since we're kind of in a little serious mode right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. Last night, after finally getting my computer back up and running after a week, after upgrading a whole bunch of stuff in it, I was checking out my Facebook stuff, and I ran across this little essay by a young man named Jonathan Bannon Mayer. He sent it out on December 8th, 2008, through the postal mail. All right. He sent it to each of the 535 members of Congress,
wow,
9 Supreme Court justices, 50 governors, the president and the president-elect, and thereafter to nearly every member of every state legislature, as well as the leadership at the Department of Defense.
Wow, that's a lot of mail.
Yes, it is. He wrote this off. He wrote and sent this off the cuff. And as I read this, I will go ahead and say this note that he's got here. There are a few minor errors, but he chose to leave the original text intact. So I am reading this as he wrote it.
Okay.
Okay. It's entitled All I Want for the Holidays. When tradesmiths, farmers, teachers, and clergy sailed west on boats from Europe with their families in the early 1600s, they sought to leave behind oppression in favor of opportunity and freedom. A century and a half later, this vision was recorded in a document, the Declaration of Independence of the United States of America, perhaps best epitomized by the idea captured in the phrase, all men are created equal. Though imperfectly gender-specific, it was the first time in the history of humanity that had ever been declared by a governing body. On November 4th of this year, we saw our founders' vision affirmed in the first election of an African-American to the highest office of the land. But on the same day, that founding vision fell short in the passage of a law in California to prohibit marriage between loving consenting adults of the same sex. I am gay, but at 27, marriage is not necessarily the first thing on my mind as I write this. Here's what is on my mind. Discriminating between heterosexuals and homosexuals in the law, be it in the opportunities for marriage, military service, or through intentional omission of protections in employment, housing, and education, which creates a stigma that carries over to the workplace and our public schools, sometimes with devastating consequences. On February 13th of this year, a 15-year-old in Ventura County, California, Lawrence King, was shot twice in the head as he sat in his middle school classroom. He was killed by a 14-year-old male classmate. According to the students in a Newsweek article, he had recently asked that same male classmate to be his Valentine. This is a problem that affects everyone when a significant percent of the population faces artificial hurdles in achieving their full potential to contribute to society. It works as to hold the country back at a time when it faces increasing global competition and challenges to its leadership status. There are, to my knowledge, three primary reasons that gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered equality has not been fully supported in the past. Number one, family. Some believe gay marriage weakens family. In opposing the legalization of gay marriage in California in 2008, reportedly more than $30 million were spent. If the money spent to oppose gay marriage had instead been contributed to family counseling services, it could have provided monthly counseling services to more than 25,000 at-risk families if the cost of the counselor were $100 per hour. Strong families provide stability and resources for children to become the leaders of tomorrow. Strong families are extremely important, but denying equality to gays is not the answer. If the goal of opponents really is strong families, then opposing gay marriage is a misallocation of resources. And let us instead come together and put resources towards social programs and counseling services that will support and strengthen families. In addition, there are more than 1 million American children who do not have homes, who do not regularly attend school or receive proper health care, and who would be better able to develop into productive members of society if they had homes, even if those homes are non-traditional. Number two, nature. Some believe that homosexuality is unnatural. Around the world, in independent populations, researchers have found a substantially consistent percentage to be same-sex oriented. Over time, homosexuals have been among those who have had the most profound impact on humanity, from Socrates to Alexander the Great to Shakespeare. Please remember, the next time you see a copy of Romeo and Juliet, or use the Socratic method, opposing gays based on nature is like opposing the wind or the sun. You can put up walls, but you would be better off putting up wind turbines and solar panels. And number three, religion. Some oppose homosexuality based on religion. For a man to lie with another man as he would a woman is toveh. This is from Leviticus 20:13, where toveh is commonly translated as abomination or sin. In that same passage, it is also declared toveh to eat shrimp. Tovei literally translates as against ritual. At the time the Bible was written, people needed to reproduce for the strength of community. Today, we have the opposite problem globally, a Malthusian state where population growth outpaces natural resource replenishment. At this point, he puts in a disclosure saying the following segment is Jed Bartlett inspired. We are also told that to touch pig skin makes one unclean, that a father may sell his daughter into slavery, and that a person should be put to death for working on the Sabbath. The Sabbath is literally translated as Saturday. Next time you're watching a football on Sunday, ask yourself as if on moral grounds you should be supporting the people who touch pig skin. Leviticus 11:8. If you're someone's daughter, next time you think to oppose homosexuals based on religion, please ask yourself, what would be a fair price for me be? Exodus 21:7. If you answer a work-related email on your BlackBerry on the Sabbath, ask yourself if law enforcement officials should be legally obligated to stone you to death. Leviticus 23:3. To those reading this who are heterosexual, in addition to full and equal treatment in every area, including workplace compensation, opportunity, and responsibility, commensurate with ability, I ask you that if you see discrimination in school or in the workplace, remember how discrimination works. They go after you for something else. If there is nothing else, they'll make something up. If you see this, speak up and out. Please. While you may be alone in your courage, you are not alone in your thinking.
others will be with you when you stand on the right side of history. And please redistribute this document. If you are a heterosexual parent of a homosexual child, please visit your local PFLAG meeting for support services. You are not alone. To those reading this who are homosexual, please come out to your friends, then to your family, and your employer. There cannot be acceptance without understanding, and please redistribute this document. Henry David Thoreau once wrote, "I know of no more encouraging fact than the unquestionable ability of a man to alleviate his life through a conscious endeavor." John Kennedy once said, "Our problems are man-made, therefore they may be solved by man." If there is anything history has shown, it is that we can progress. That humanity can progress. That there will be a better tomorrow, one where to the vision this country was founded upon is fully realized, where we, together as a country, once more sail west and leave behind oppression in favor of opportunity and freedom. Thank you for reading. And he's got a long list of people he sent this to.
And that was by?
This was by Jonathan Bannon Maher. That's spelled M-A-H-E-R. Very, very powerful.
Yes.
Essay. And I mean, it was just something.
And he looks young.
He does.
He looks very young.
He does. He really does. I saw this last night, and I read it in its entirety and was just absolutely floored because, I mean, he speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm.
This must have been like maybe.
There are so few people, you know, we heard the poem by Pat Parker, but there are so few people putting out activist poetry and prose and essays,
mm-hmm.
It seems these days. Certainly none that reaches our ears.
Exactly.
The great unwashed, mm-hmm. as I like to put it. You know, when you start doing your poetry and metaphors, you kind of lose me. But when you talk directly to me, I can understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's what he did a great job
yes.
of doing that here.
Yes.
I mean, he spoke. He didn't speak in metaphors. He didn't speak.
No.
And he was straightforward about it. Pull.
And he wasn't hysterical.
No, not in the least bit.
In his writing, it was just very to the point.
Very much so. And I mean, again, it was something that I mean, he started it off in a very, very great way,
mm-hmm.
talking about how we came to this country to get away from the oppression and everything else.
And we just brought it right with us.
And instead of getting away from it, they brought it with us.
Sometimes I think...
And
you
it's
know,
just grown over history.
In all the years I've lived, I sometimes think it's a human trait of... it's so much easier to look down upon someone than to improve yourself.
Exactly.
Survival of the fittest has expanded to mean the fittest oppress those who are not.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
The eyes of those who think they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. A lot of things to think about close to Pride Day.
Exactly.
I like to do that. I like to think about stuff like that and where we are, how far we've come, which in the last 20 to 25 years has been incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But
how about in the last 40 years?
Yeah.
I mean, let's go back to that far. I mean,
yeah, I don't think there was much of a gay community or a gay culture more than 50 years ago.
Probably not. But I say let's go back 40 years when Stonewall happened,
mm-hmm.
when we started coming out and saying, "Look, we're tired of this."
Yeah.
And the funny thing is we started saying we're tired of this 40 years ago and we're still saying it today.
Yeah.
We're not saying it enough, or as one who has seen how far we've come, many of us have decided, okay, you know, I've fought to get this far, and I'm happy with getting this far.
But we still have a long way to go.
Yes, we do.
You know, and I think that's where that's where people like myself,
mm-hmm.
like some of our other guys. from the show here.
Yeah, the 20-somethings, we need to recruit them. We want to recruit you to be activists.
Need to get out there and say, look, we're tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they haven't been doing it as long as you have, Jimmy. Or as long as Merlin has.
That's right. I get it.
They still need to be tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
They still need to fight.
Don't be complacent.
Because, and
we are so close.
You know, this right here, this essay brings back a thought of mine from a few years back when I was still living in Florida. And I was talking to a friend of mine. And I said, if we actually stopped and thought about it, all these people that spend all this money to go to, like, the white party, the blue party, the red party, mm-hmm. all these different parties around the country that happen, if those people would take some of the money that they spend on the airfare, the hotels,
the booze, the food, everything
that they do at these parties, they took at least half of that money and put it towards some of the stuff that we're fighting for, what kind of a difference would that make?
You know, It's
they're going to spend it to have fun, so make it a fundraiser.
Yeah.
There you go.
Put the D on the end of the fund.
Yeah.
Yeah, but are we actually going to do that? I don't think so.
Well?
Not until something kicks somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, you know, every bit of activism that happens on the tail end of a tragic event,
mm-hmm.
of something huge. Everything from Stonewall to AIDS to Matthew Shepard to, you know, Brawl Broussard.
Yeah.
It takes, unfortunately, until you move people emotionally, until you, and even if that emotion is sometimes shame, you know, sometimes you have to shame people into doing
yeah.
what's right, which is kind of pathetic but true. You know, it's unfortunate that those are the kinds of things that cause this stuff. It would be nice if people saw the problem before we had those events, you know, before that mm-hmm. had to happen.
In my lifetime, I am 61 years old. When I was a teenager, I knew I was gay. I didn't know what it meant. I had never heard the word, I did not hear the word homosexuality until I was 15. I was already having sex. I didn't have a name for it. Mm-hmm. I had no concept at all that men could live together as a loving couple. Because mm-hmm. I'd never seen it, never heard about it, never read about it. Couldn't. There wasn't anything to read about it.
Right.
A week before I turned 18, I found myself living in New York City, Manhattan, West 82nd Street, Riverside Drive.
Another world from here?
Yeah. And realized, started meeting some gay people who, of course, weren't out either. No one was out. But the revelation that actually men could live together as a couple was just amazing to me. It was like this light bulb going off because I'd never seen it. What I was used to seeing is either sex with single men hurriedly and then they run off somewhere, or sex with married men
and they run off hurriedly.
Yeah. And kind of in my mind I thought, well, this probably is what's going to be in store for me. I'll, you know, get married and then, you know, play around on the side. That's really what I thought my future was going to be. And when I found out that it was possible mm-hmm. to live with another man, which is what I really wanted to do, I didn't know anybody did that.
Yeah.
Now, that was when I was 17. it seems almost impossible today that anybody could be at that age and come to that realization and not know beforehand. I don't see how anybody could, with television and the internet and how much we're out of the closet and open, plus the fact that on no one's radar back then, we're talking the late 60s, mm-hmm. no one's radar was their gay marriage.
Right.
That was an impossibility. That would never happen.
Well, even with that too, the out and openly out gay actors, gay musicians,
mm-hmm.
gay politicians.
It's been slow in coming, one by one. You know, we're starting. You know, we've got the entertainment field. We've got the political field, we've got the business field, we're working on the sports field.
On one level, you hear people talk about that we're a young movement comparatively. You know, we've been at this for 40 years.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, equal rights, you know, as far as civil rights for, as far as the black community, all of that. I mean, how long did we oppress them?
Oh, yeah.
400 years?
Yeah.
You know, 400 or 500 mm-hmm. years. You see us as being there's so many who see us as being a young movement, even within the community. But, you know, here we are in 2009, and you just sort of hope that it doesn't take 400 years for mm-hmm. our group.
Exactly.
Know? Yeah, 25 years ago, if you were openly gay, you didn't have a future in the corporate world.
No.
Period.
You didn't have a future pretty much anywhere.
No, you had to work in a gay business if you wanted to be openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago, when on this show, all we talked about was come out of the closet and let's get Reagan to say the word AIDS.
Yeah.
20 years ago, it was come out of the closet.
And 20 years later, I'm still holding a grudge on
that topic. And now it's... everyone is out of the closet, pretty yep. much. Except for people who live in small towns, people who still are not comfortable with it.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and do an ID real quick. You're listening to Listener Sponsored Particular Radio, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and as always, www.kpft.org.
Yes.
You're listening to After Hours here doing Pride Month.
You are Wes. I am Jimmy.
Yes.
And I'm Merlin.
Yep, that's Merlin sitting over there in Chris's spot.
Yeah. I just sort of slid into this chair and figured I'd hang out for
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah.
Put in his... 4 cents.
You may have heard him jangling in here.
Yeah. As everybody here is fond of,
we know when he's coming.
You always know when I'm on my
oh,
way
yeah.
because, as we like to say, I couldn't sneak up on Helen Keller.
You hear his jingle 5 hours before
That's
he shows
right,
up.
That's right. All that silver exactly. jewelry jingling.
All the and my chains and my chain belt and stuff. Anyhow. You know, I can't help but I always go back to this same thing from a TV show.
Yeah.
When we talk about stuff like this. And because to me, it is still so powerful. It was an episode of Designing Women.
Mm-hmm.
And an old woman who is 100 and who in the episode is 100 years old. And she's in a hospital bed. And she says something that just... gets me that, you know, it's we ain't where we should be. We ain't where we're gonna be. But at least we ain't where we were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still have very far to go, but we've come a long way, and Yippee. It's just and that's a powerful thing. I mean,
okay.
I mm-hmm. remember going in my lifetime, okay. and I'm 20 years younger than Jimmy. I, in my lifetime, being gay in high school and in, you know, in the early years of that short stint I did in college, were living hell to me. I had lockers destroyed. I had kids call me names. I had, you know, from day to day, they couldn't decide whether to call me fag or cripple. I mean, pick one. But I remember going through that stuff, and I'm like, and here we are. It's been more than 20 years now since I got out of high school. And there's still people dying for being queer.
Yeah.
We've come a long way. Yes, there are out politicians and out doctors and lawyers, and, you know, and we get closer and closer to that Harvey Milk moment of everybody just being who they are. We get closer to that. But I would just love, while in my lifetime, to see a point where this just, where we don't have to talk about this, where it is not an issue, where it doesn't have to be discussed, because it just doesn't matter to anybody anymore, on a level where, you know, we can just say everybody's this, everybody's that, it's okay, you know.
Yeah. We'll get there. It may not be in my lifetime, but we'll get there.
Well, it may or may not be in my lifetime.
No, it'll be in yours.
Because I can honestly say, from being in the military myself, that the military, there's some people there that are trying. Obviously, there are those that have been in their positions longer than God's been in his.
Longer than they should be, yes.
That are opposed to gays and lesbians serving in the military. Okay. Because, I mean, take Don't Ask, Don't Tell, for example. Yeah, it's an okay program. But this is a large but. Even though Don't Ask, Don't Tell came into play, they removed the question from the application form for when you signed up that asked if you have or will think of having
homosexual tendencies.
Yes, exactly. Even though they blacked that out and changed the form the next year, they still, without a whole lot of hoopla about it, still held the witch hunts.
Sure. Oh, sure. In fact, the numbers prove it.
Yeah. Now,
more people were kicked out under Don't Ask, Don't Tell than before.
Yeah. Now, I will say this, in defense of those that are more progressive in their natures, the ship that I was on when I decided to leave my military service, and I used Don't Ask, Don't Tell to do that, because I had just signed up another enlistment, and it just came to me one day that I was done. I didn't want to do it anymore. And I found my one loophole to go ahead and break my contract and not have any repercussions. They actually, my chain of command actually offered me the chance to go ahead and still serve as an openly gay man.
Wow.
Stay aboard the ship, do my time, and continue on. Or go ahead and be discharged. I went ahead and took my discharge. Sat in the legal office for 4 hours doing my deposition, giving them just signed my paper at the end stating that everything that I told them was true and accurate. And because of the way things went, I was still able to retain my honorable discharge, retain all my benefits. The only negative aspect to it is, and it may come around, and it may not be a negative aspect to me now, but it could be in the future if I really wanted to go back
is I can't, because there's a discharge code on on my military record that that prevents me from going back. But I mean, again, like I said, just like in every aspect of every other part of life, the military's trying.
Now, I want to talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and maybe clear up a little misconception that I've noticed in a couple of people. Getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is just getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Mm-hmm.
We still haven't solved the problem of gays in the military. Just because you get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell doesn't mean that gays are going to be allowed in the military. You still have that hurdle to cross.
Even with the enactment of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, didn't solve the problem.
No.
It just created more.
Yeah. Now, could you have served really openly on a ship?
At that command, yes.
And everybody would know?
My chain of command would have known.
Okay.
It wouldn't have been common knowledge to everybody else.
Okay.
Because it was nobody else's business.
Yeah.
As long as I was still doing what I was supposed to do, fulfilling my duty
mm-hmm.
aboard the ship and doing my job,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't have mattered.
Okay.
My chain of command would have known, which would have been my department head, which would have been the legal officer, would have been everybody else. I mean, it wouldn't have mattered to anybody. So I went ahead. Yeah. I went ahead and took the option of going ahead and just taking my discharge and walking down the street and holding my head up high.
Yeah. Okay. And it seems that there are so many. You know, we hear about these people who then get their names and everything, the Kammermeyers and all of these military folks. And equally, though, we still hear about situations like the person in that Soldier Boy movie
mm-hmm.
who had a trans lover ended up dead because mm-hmm. his military buddies couldn't get a grip, and beat him to death.
We had a caller call in and wanted to know what your job was.
My job in the military?
Yeah, whether it was medical or translator.
I was actually administrative.
What does that mean?
Basically, my job was I handled day-to-day correspondence. If it got down to really specific, and then I actually fulfilled the full job capacity that I was supposed to fulfill, I was basically supposed to maintain and handle all officer service records for my command.
Mm-hmm.
But not only did I was assigned to a specific office that didn't have to deal with that, which was in that was on the board of the ship. That was part of the ship's admin office.
Okay.
We had the personnel office, which handled regular service members' records.
Mm-hmm.
But I was part of the deck department, so I had other duties which entailed day-to-day correspondence for the deck department. And I took dictation for the department head. Ran correspondence to him when he was on duty over mm-hmm. in classified areas of the ship where nobody else was allowed to go. I handled a multitude of different things, but mainly I was an administrator. Sounds basically like what it was.
Administrative assistant?
Basically, in a way, yeah. Because
more than a secretary.
More than a secretary, but I mean, I held quite a few individual job titles,
mm-hmm.
especially when
sounded
I was...
to me like the military equivalent of an office manager.
In a way, because especially on board the ship, I was in my office. I was the only administrator. I was the one that took care of all the paperwork for my entire department.
Mm-hmm.
I was the one that took care of making sure that when we did our daily muster, that got turned into the personnel office, making sure that everybody and I had other duties on top of that because I was also in charge of lifeboats on the ship. I was in charge of my department's computer systems
mm-hmm.
and all that. I held a lot of titles on board the ship. On shore, I held a lot of titles also, but I was in... I started off in one office, they moved me to another one, and then I finally got, while somebody was on maternity leave, and then I got moved to a third office where I finished my tour of duty there.
Mm-hmm.
But I held different different positions, but it all related back to my same job.
Mm-hmm.
So mainly administration.
Okay.
For those that were in the Navy, they'll know the title Yeoman is what I was. And I was good at my job. I went in and did my job in a professional manner every single day. And
I can see you doing that.
Yeah. I got many awards. Many awards.
Really?
Yeah. They're all sitting at home. A couple of them are framed up on the wall, mm-hmm. and everything. But two of them are my more... what's the word I'm looking for? My favorite awards.
The ones you're most proud of?
Yeah, the ones I'm most proud of because they're... For anybody of my rank,
mm-hmm.
that I ever knew, and even some that, like I knew a couple of corpsmen, which were medical guys.
Yeah.
Some of those guys that were in my rank and had been that same rank for a few years didn't have as many of this one particular award that I had.
Oh.
So I was actually proud of being able to grab two of them.
Mm-hmm.
In my service time.
Okay.
And one thing most people ask me.
Yeah.
Do I regret leaving?
Do you?
On one hand, yes. On the other hand, no.
You couldn't be really you. I mean, you had to suppress your sexuality.
Well, not necessarily that. The reason I regret, on the hand that says, yes, I regret leaving,
mm-hmm.
is I miss the camaraderie that I had when I was in the military. Because unlike, let's say, my current job,
mm-hmm.
where it's dog eat dog and everybody's going to step on you and stab you in the back every time they get a chance.
Well, that's the corporate world.
Like I found out this weekend of one particular individual, which is going to get his up and comings.
Oh.
Ooh. In the military, everybody works together as a cohesive unit. You don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to the old adage, the chain is only as strong as its weakest link.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Corporate world.
Corporate world, there is no chain.
I know, I work there.
Who's going to eat who so they can get ahead?
Exactly. On the hand that says I don't regret it, is I moved on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
I am now who I am. I am doing the things that I enjoy to do. And the only time I have somebody telling me what to do is when I'm at work. When I'm off work, it's my time, and I don't give a damn what you say.
Well, isn't that the same in the service?
Well, you got to think about it this way.
As long as you're in the service, you're owned by the government.
When you're in the service, you're in the service 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. In the corporate world only owns you for 40 hours a week.
Well, they'll try to get you for more than that.
They'll try to get you for more than that, but they only own you for 40 hours a week.
True.
You're not contracted to them to work 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Like you are with the military.
And the thing of it is, anything that you happen to do, any kind of trouble you might get in, would be a reflection on the service and...
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you get into double trouble.
You can get into double trouble. There's a lot of things that overlap that the military will say, hey, we're going to take care of this. Mm-hmm. You don't need to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll go ahead, they'll punish you, and then turn you back over to civilian police, and they'll punish you.
Oh, boy.
So double jeopardy doesn't count there.
Yeah.
You will get in trouble twice.
Yes.
Well,
if you're a bad boy, then that's going to happen. But if you keep your nose clean.
Yeah. You can keep your nose clean in the civilian world, but get your butt in trouble so much in a military world that you can get what we call the big chicken dinner, a bad conduct discharge, and never be able to work anywhere.
Oh. You see, many, 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 many years ago, during Vietnam, when I turned 18 and had to sign up for...
The draft.
The draft. And even though I think you signed up at 17, because that happened in New Jersey, where I grew up, and then I turned 18 in New York, then I moved down here. So they had a little trouble finding me for mm-hmm. a while, but they did finally get to me. And I did what, and I had a lover at the time, so I did what was referred to at the time as I signed the box.
Uh-huh.
The box being, do you have any of these, you know, and it goes through, you know, mental illness, this, that, the other, homosexual tendencies. And I signed that box. Mm-hmm. Check that box.
Yeah.
And boy, as soon as I did that, everybody got real official.
Oh, yes, they
did. And, you know,
you were probably promptly escorted from the room.
Well, you see, at that time, there were a lot of straight guys that were signing the box just to get out of going to Vietnam. So they gave you the lecture about how they were going to watch you.
Uh-huh.
They knew where you lived, and they were going to watch you and make sure that, you know, what you're saying here is the truth and mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, because they got heavy fines for that stuff.
And now that I've signed the box, I could never hold a government job for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that didn't turn out to be true. But, of course, at the time it was. And so, you know, you leave there feeling kind of diseased. But,
yeah.
But
and no, and, yeah, but at the same time, for those that did sign that box and were lying to mm-hmm. sign that box, had to probably pull off some pretty nasty tricks.
Yeah, I don't think I could have done it.
But at the same time, they had to also think about, oh, there's a heavy fine on top of this.
Mm-hmm, if they find out.
Because I don't know how much it was back then, but now it's $10,000.
Really?
Yes, $10,000 and or jail time.
Wow.
Ooh.
Now, I kind of figured that, you know, if I went into the service...
Or being a whole lot...
I was afraid that if I actually didn't sign the box, went into the service, ended up in Vietnam... Eventually, maybe some of the guys I was with would find out, mm-hmm. and maybe they wouldn't exactly protect me so much.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
I mean, unless we...
I didn't know.
Unless we knew somebody that was a gay and in Vietnam.
You know, back then, the guys who were actually in the service were not real gay friendly.
Well, you never know. There may have been some that would have been like, look, I'll watch your back, but let's try to keep this quiet.
Yeah. There may have been. I'll never know.
You just never know. Unless we run across one of our listeners that was in that situation.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get back to a little bit of music.
Yep.
And this next thing, I think if it's on CD number 3.
Yeah, we'll do that one first, and then I'll...
And this is an oldie. This is a good 15 years old.
Oh, really?
And it's called the Gay History Rap.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's put to it.
You'll learn a little history there if you listen to it.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back soon, guys.
Are you ready for a story?
Yeah.
A story of our past.
At last.
A story of faggots.
Story of dying.
Story of many incredible fights.
A story of good.
Story of bad.
Story that made us fighting mad.
His story.
Her story.
Our story.
Gay story. History.
Gay history.
Mighty clear. It was against the law to run a bar for queers. Prices inside were more than double.
didn't want trouble, but something strange was a-brewing inside. Faggots and dykes feeling something like pride. Stage was set, people in place for the cops and the queers to meet face to face.
Gay history rock! The first three arrested were men in drag, but these queens were not cringing fags. When a crowd started gathering, seeing the scene, shouted support to those three queens. Through the door came another queer, stocky little woman who knew no fear. Screaming, punching, kicking pigs, crowd gave a yell because she wasn't too big. Running and hiding was a thing of the past when this tough dyke started kicking ass. Gay history rock! Heavens were flaring and the real fun began when the crowd decided to give her a hand.
They both ordered and followed through down on the heads of the cops and all around.
Feeling the rage, the cops ran and hid in the very bar they were supposed to rid.
A margarita smashed against the door, then a fire started spreading across the floor. Three days later, peace was destroyed.
The hinges were sprung on the closet doors. Gay history rock!
The nation has swung to the right, and more people have seen the light. Murders and muggings and a lot more fights. Sex and discos instead of rights. History rock! Now that the nation has swung to the right and more people have seen the light. Murders and muggings and a lot more fights. Sex and discos instead of rights.
talented Bobby McFerrin. Lions and tigers and bears. Lions and tigers and bears. Lions and tigers and bears. Lions and tigers and bears.
That is an amazing, amazing piece of work by Bobby McFerrin.
I really enjoyed that. That was nice.
Every sound you heard was his voice. No musical instruments used at all. I don't know how he did it.
He did use the audience, though.
He did use the audience, yes. Oh, my.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
He did. Woo. Try that again, Merlin.
Yes, there was audience participation.
Yes,
there.
Yes. I'm just amazed every time I hear that piece.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time I've heard it.
I thought it would be a good thing to play in Pride Month.
Yeah, there you go.
Since The Wizard of Oz is such a gay movie.
Yeah, a lot of
finding yourself and being true to yourself and yeah. Being who you really are.
And considering we're all friends of Dorothy.
Yes, we are.
I have to say, you know, 60, 70 years later, they'd...
Excuse me.
You know, if Glinda had said, you always had the ability to go home, Dorothy would have looked at her like, excuse me, biatch.
Yeah, well,
now you tell we go through all this stuff, and
now you tell me. And she pulls out a Glock 9.
Exactly. Yeah, I shot that bird.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. But before that,
we had from the B-52's new album that
Funplex
that I've been playing tonight. Funplex. Yeah. We had Keep This Party Going.
Now, I bought that about a month or so ago, and I got to listen to it, once or twice, and you've been listening to it all week, and you're just thrilled with it.
I really am. I really, really am.
Earlier
in fact,
you gave me
a whole bunch of CDs,
uh-huh.
And I've been slowly making my way through them, because for some reason I get home, music's not on my mind, but I'll listen to it while I'm at work, because while I'm sitting there writing up paperwork
there
and stuff, I have time to listen, so okay. I'll pop it in the CD-ROM at work, and I'll sit and I'll listen to it, and of course, the guy I work with, he gets to hear it too, so I try to take the clean ones to work with me.
Yeah, good idea.
Mark,
yeah. No. Yeah, not the real queer ones, yeah.
I mean, there was one that talked about Jim Coach and his shorts. And
oh, yeah.
As soon as I heard those words, I pulled the CD right out. I was like, no, I can't play that one here.
No,
for the next song, please.
Yeah. But Funplex, earlier in the show, you said you liked all the cuts.
Yeah, the entire CD was just absolutely fabulous, if I can use that word. I think
Yeah.
But just it was just a fun,
okay.
Very fun CD.
Okay, so I know one woman out there who's going to be buying that CD.
Yeah.
Very shortly.
I highly recommend it. So go out there, find it. Again, it's called Funplex by the B-52s.
Mm-hmm.
I
got it at Soundwaves.
Yeah, and it's even got a little... inside the jacket here, it's got all the words to all the songs listed here. So
I always like that.
Yeah.
Although with the B-52s,
it's got this interesting little black and white wavy stuff going on.
You can actually
here.
Understand the words when the B-52s are singing.
Yeah.
The B-52s, living proof that you really don't have to have talent to sing.
It's not. Okay, Fred is not a real good singer,
kidding.
You know, like, okay, but he likes some good stuff.
I just go back to that whole Love Shack era, and it was,
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, that was an interesting song.
Interesting song, but parts of it are a bit like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
Well,
oh, no, it's great.
Well, we still got a
little
bit.
Just like Rock Lobster and Planet Claire.
There you go.
I know we still got time in the night, so I want to try to get in one more song from this album since I'm enjoying it. We got one of our listeners out there that is enjoying it. Give her another taste of one of the songs from here. It's got 11 songs on it. I've played two so far. I'll play another one.
Okay.
Along with a few other songs that we got lined up.
Was that all that you played?
No, actually, I played, let's see, what did I... Lost my list. Where is it? I played "Keep on Dancing" again from the Studio 54. A lot of these songs. I mean, a lot of our listeners will probably recognize from their early heydays, and a lot of these have actually kind of fallen over in today's clubs. So, I mean, a lot of gay impact here with
"Keep
these
on
songs.
Dancing." Who did that?
"Keep on Dancing" was. Gotta get my note here. Gary's Gang.
Okay, that's not the original.
Not the original, they did this for the movie.
Okay,
so
we've got something that we're going to play now. We do every year in the month of June, and it's a half hour tape. It's called the History of the Stonewall Riots. This was done probably about 20 years ago, and it's an interview with people who were at the Stonewall riots on both sides, the police and the participants. You'll hear
Sylvia
Rivera is in there, yes. And after I first heard that, we got to interview her twice before she died. It's not reading it?
Hold on a second. Let me try to get it.
Try it in another CD.
Yeah.
We just we had it on cassette tape, and Chris just put it on CD here in the studio while we were talking, which I thought was fabulous.
Ah, there it goes.
And this is gonna go through the top of the hour, so we will have to interrupt right at the top of the hour to give. A station ID, but that will be the only interruption you hear for the next 30 minutes.
So, all right, so you'll hear from us in about 12 minutes or so. So let me get everything set here.
So sit back, relax, and enjoy this. This is what the parade is all about. This is why we walk down Westheimer.
This is why we fight the way we fight.
Yes, it is.
All right, so here we go. We'll be back in 12 minutes for station ID and finish this up.
Today, this white two-story building across from Sheridan Square in Greenwich Village is a clothing store and a closed Chinese restaurant. 20 years ago, this was the Stonewall Inn. I'm Michael Shirker, and I'm working on the first comprehensive history of the Stonewall riots. In 1969, the Stonewall was one of the most popular gay bars in New York City, and like all other gay bars, was routinely raided by the Vice Squad. The patrons of these bars, many of whom were frightened at having their identities revealed, would quietly submit to any orders coming from the police. Yet, on June 27th, 1969, that all changed. The patrons of this bar, with the drag queens at the forefront, decided to fight back against the police. What happened here on that night would spark a revolution.
I am Gene Harwood, and my age is 80.
I'm Bruce Merrill.
He also would like to know what your age is. So you
my age? 78? Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know if it's really true, but now people do refer to us as the two oldest gay men in America. We do, have maybe a record relationship of almost 60 years together. Bruce's memory started going bad in 1984. Fortunately, we have our music together, which we've done over the years. We've written any number of songs. Bruce remembers the melodies very well and the lyrics of the songs.
When you touched me, when you took my hand, something happened I had never planned.
Being gay before Stonewall was a very difficult proposition, because we felt that in order to survive, we had to try to look and act as straight as possible. The general attitude of society, as far as employers were concerned and landlords, all of these people were very hostile, and to protect ourselves, we had to act as rugged and manly as possible to get by in
my name
in
is
the
Randy Wicker. I was the first openly gay person to appear on radio in 1962 and on television in 1964 as a self-identified homosexual. In the year before Stonewall, people felt a need to hide because of the precarious legal position they were in. They would lose their jobs. There was a great hostility, socially speaking, in the sense that people found out you were gay, they assumed you were a communist or a child molester or any of another dozen stereotypes that were rampant in the public media at the time.
I'm Jerry Fair, and I'm 80 years old. I started a gay lifestyle in 1948 when I was around 39 or 40. At that time, if there was even a suspicion that you were gay, that you were a lesbian, you were fired from your job, and you were in such a position of disgrace that you slunk out without saying goodbye even to the people that liked you and you liked. Never even bothered to clean your desk. You just disappeared. You just disappeared. You went quietly because you were afraid that the recriminations that would come if you even stood there and protested would be worse than just leaving.
My name is Sylvia Rivera. My name before that was Ray Rivera, and so I started dressing in drag in 1961. The era before Stonewall was a hard era. There was always the gay bashings on the drag queens by heterosexual men, women, and the police. We learned to live with it because it was part of the lifestyle at that time, I guess. But none of us were very happy about it.
My name is Seymour Pine. In 1968, I was assigned as deputy inspector in charge of public morals in the first division in the police department, which covered South Manhattan from 38th Street to the Battery, including the Greenwich Village area. It was the duty of public morals to enforce all laws concerning vice and gambling, including prostitution, narcotics, and laws and regulations concerning homosexuality. The part of the penal code which applied to drag queens was section 240.35, section 4. Being masked or in any manner disguised by unusual or unnatural attire or facial alteration, loiters, remains, or congregates in a public
place. At that time, we lived at the Arista Hotel. We sit around, just try to figure out when this harassment would come to an end. And we would always dream that one day it would come to an end. And we prayed and we looked for it. We wanted to be human beings.
My name is Red Mahoney. I've been hanging out, drinking, partying, and working in the gay bars for the last 30 years. In the era before Stonewall, all of the bars, 90% of the bars, were mafia-controlled. They were controlled because the mafia had the right connections. There wasn't that many gay bars. It had maybe one, two uptown on the Upper East Side. They would get closed down, and there'd be one or two on the West Side. They'd get closed down, and Midtown, there'd be one, two, three, maybe open. As they would get closed down, they'd move around, and they would dump.
I'm Joan Nessel, co-founder of what is now the largest collection of lesbian culture in the world. The police raided lesbian bars regularly, and they did it. They both did it in the most obvious way, which was hauling women away in paddy wagons. But there was regular weekend harassment, which would consist of the police coming in regularly to get their payoffs. And in the Sea Colony, we had a back room with a red light. And when that red light went on, it meant the police would be arriving in around 10 minutes. And so we all had to sit down at our tables. And we would be sitting there almost like school children. And the cops would come in. Now, depending on who was on, which cop was on, if it was some that really resented the butch women, who were with many times very beautiful women, we knew we were in for it, because what would happen is they would start harassing one of these women and saying, "Huh, you think you're a man? Come outside, we'll show you." And the woman would be dragged away. They'd throw up against a wall, and they'd say, "So you think you're a man? Let's see what you got in your pants." And they would put their hand down her pants.
The Stonewall, oh, that was a good bar. That was. Just to get into the Stonewall, you'd walk up and you'd knock on the front door. You'd knock and the little door would open and, "Hey, what do you want?" "A Mary sent me." "Good, come on in, girls." You know, when you walked in, to your right was your bar room, no windows. Down at the far end of the bar was an opening in the wall going into the dance room with the jukebox in that room, and no windows in that room either. The Stonewall, like all gay bars at that time, were painted black. Charcoal black. And what was the funny part? The place would be so dimly lit, but as soon as the cops are going to come in to collect their percentage or whatever they were coming in for, from it being a nice, dimly lit dump, the place was lit up like Luna Park.
You felt, well, two guys, and that's very often all we sent in would be two men. Could handle 200 people. I mean, you tell them to leave, and they leave, and you say, "Show me your identification," and they all take out their identification and file out, and that's it. And you say, "Okay, you're not a man, you're a woman, or you're vice versa, and you wait over there." I mean, this is a kind of power that you have, and you never gave it a second thought.
The drag queen took a lot of oppression, and we had to... We were at a point where, I guess, nothing would have stopped us. I guess as they say, or as Shakespeare says, we were ladies in waiting, just waiting for the thing to happen. And when it did happen, we were there.
On Friday night, June 27, 1969, at about 11:45, eight officers from Public Morals 1st Division loaded into four unmarked police cars. From their headquarters on 21st Street and 3rd Avenue, they headed downtown and then west towards the Stonewall Inn here at 7th Avenue and Christopher Street. It was the second time the bar was raided that week. The local 6th Precinct had just received a new commanding officer who kicked off his tenure by initiating a series of raids on gay bars. And New York was in the midst of a mayoral campaign, always a bad time for homosexuals. Mayor John Lindsay had good reason to agree to the police crackdown. He had just lost his party's primary and needed a popularity boost. And the Stonewall Inn was indeed an inviting target. Operated by the Gambino crime family without a liquor license, this dance bar drew a crowd of drag queens, hustlers, minors, and more masculine lesbians known as bull dykes. Many were black or Hispanic. It was a warm night in New York City and a somber day for many. Judy Garland, who had died earlier in the week, was buried that morning. It was almost precisely at midnight that the Moral Squad pulled up to the Stonewall Inn, led by Deputy Inspector Seymour Pine.
There was never any reason.
We're going to step in here for a quick ID. You're listening to After Hours on listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and as always, www.kpft.org. We're going to go back to the Stonewall interviews, and we'll be back with a little bit of music straight after that.
To feel that anything of any unusual situation would occur that night.
He could actually feel it.
Yeah.
He really could. I guess Judy Garland's death just really helped us really hit the fan.
For some reason, things were different this night. As we were bringing the prisoners out, they were resisting.
People started gathering in front of the Sheridan Square Park right across the street from Stonewall. People were upset. No, we're not going to go. And people started screaming and hollering.
One drag queen, as we put her in the car, opened the door on the other side and jumped out. At which time we had to chase that person, and he was caught, put back into the car. He made another attempt to get out the same door, the other door, and at that point we had to handcuff the person. From this point on, things really began to get crazy.
My name is Robert Rivera, and my nickname is Birdie, and I've been cross-dressing all of my life. I remember the night of the riots. The police were escorting the queens out of the bar and into the paddy wagon. And there was this one particularly outrageously beautiful queen with stacks and stacks of Elizabeth Taylor-style hair. And she was asking them not to push her. And they continued to push her, and she turned around and she mashed the cop with her high heel. She knocked him down, and then she proceeded to frisk him for the keys to the handcuffs that were on him. She got them, and she undid herself and passed them to another queen that was behind her.
Well, that's when all hell broke loose at that point. And then we had to get back into the Stonewall.
My name is Howard Smith. On the night of the Stonewall riots, I was a reporter for the Village Voice, locked inside with the police, covering it for my column. It really did appear that that crowd, because we could look through little peepholes in the plywood windows, we could look out, and we could see that the crowd, well, my guess was within 5-10 minutes, it was probably several thousand people. Yeah. 2,000, easy. And they were yelling, kill the cops, police brutality. Let's get them. We're not going to take this anymore. Let's
we
get them.
We noticed a group of persons attempting to uproot one of the parking meters, in which they did succeed. And they then used that parking meter to as a battering ram to break down the door. And they did, in fact, open the door. They crashed it in. And at that point was when they began throwing Molotov cocktails into the place. It was a situation that we didn't know how we were going to be able to control.
I remember someone throwing a Molotov cocktail. I don't know who the person was. But, I mean, I saw that, and I just said to myself in Spanish, I said, oh, my God, the revolution is finally here. And I just, like, started screaming, freedom. We're free at last, you know. And it felt really good.
There were a couple of cops stationed on either side of the door with their pistols, like in a combat stance, aimed in the door area. A couple others were stationed in other places behind, like a pole, another one behind the bar, all of them with their guns ready. I don't think up to that point I had ever seen cops that scared.
Remember, these were pros, but everybody was frightened. There's no question about that. I know I was frightened, and I've been in combat situations, and there was never any time that I felt more scared than I felt that night. And, I mean, there was just, you know, there was no place to run.
When the Morrill Squad officers barricaded themselves inside the Stonewall, Deputy Inspector Pine put in a 1041 call, an emergency help request which can only be placed by a high-ranking officer. That call was mysteriously canceled, and the telephone inside the Stonewall went dead. It took nearly 45 minutes for the riot police to get to the Stonewall and rescue the Morrill Squad from the smoldering bar.
Once the tactical police force showed up, I think that really incited us a little bit.
Yeah. My name is Martin Boyce. In 1969, I was a drag queen known as Miss Martin. I remember on that night, when we saw the riot police, all of us drag queens, we linked arms, lighted the rockets, and sang the song we used to sing. We are the village girls. We wear our hair in curls. We wear our dungarees above our Nelly knees. And the police went crazy hearing that, and they just immediately rushed us. We gave one kick and fled.
My name is Rudy, and the night of the Stonewall, I was 18. And to tell you the truth, that night I was doing more running than fighting. I remember looking back from 10th Street. And there on Waverly Street, there was a police, I believe, on his cop, and his on his stomach in his tactical uniform and his helmet and everything else, with a drag queen straddling him. She was beating the hell out of him with her shoe. Whether it was a high heel or not, I don't know. But she was beating the hell out of him. It was hysterical.
My name is Mama Jean. I'm a lesbian, and I guess you would label me as a butch. I remember on that night, I was in a gay bar, a women's bar, called Cookies. We were coming out of the gay bar, going toward 8th Street. And that's when we saw everything happen. Blasting away, people getting beat up. Police coming from every direction. Hitting women as well as men with their nightsticks. Gay men running down the street with blood all over their face. We decided right then and there whether we were scared or not. We didn't think about it. We just jumped in.
But here, this queen is going completely bananas, you know, jumping and hitting the windshield. And next thing you know, the taxi cab was being turned over. The cars were being turned over. Things. Windows were shattering all over the place. Fires were burning around the place. It was beautiful. It really was.
I remember one cop coming at me, hitting me with the nightstick in the back of my legs. I broke loose and I went after him. I grabbed his nightstick. My girlfriend went behind him. She was a strong southern girl. I wanted him to feel the same pain I felt. And I kept on saying to him, how do you like the pain? Do you like it? Do you like it? I kept on hitting him and hitting him. I was angry. I wanted to kill him. At that particular minute, I wanted
to kill him. I wanted to do every destructive thing that I could think of at that time to hurt anyone that had hurt us for years.
It's like just when you see a man protecting his own life. They weren't the queens that people called them. They were men fighting for their lives. And I fight alongside them any day, no matter how old I was.
A lot of heads were bashed. But it didn't hurt their every time true feelings. They all came back from war. Nothing, that's when you could tell that nothing could stop us from that time or any time in the future.
The media covered the riot extensively. The Daily News featured it on its front page. There were reports on all the local television and radio stations. By the next day, graffiti calling for gay power had appeared on buildings and sidewalks all over the West Village. Hastily worked up flyers distributed on street corners touted the night as the hairpin drop heard round the world. And the next night, thousands of men and women converged on the West Village. They came here, back to the Stonewall, to see what would happen next. While trash cans were set on fire, stones were thrown, and sporadic fighting broke out between police and gays, the more than 400 riot police milling around the village ensured that the previous night's violence would not be repeated. But on this night, for the first time, gay couples could be seen walking hand in hand or kissing in the streets. Just by being there, surrounded by reporters and photographers and onlookers, thousands of men and women were proclaiming to themselves and the rest of the world that they were gay. And the crowds grew and came back the next night, and for one more night the following week. What happened here on those nights helped to usher in a new era, both personally and politically, for gay men and lesbians.
Oh, when Stonewall happened, Bruce and I were still in the closet, where we had been for nearly 40 years, but we realized that this was a tremendous thing that had happened at Stonewall, and it gave us a feeling that we were not going to be remaining closeted for very much longer. And soon thereafter, we did come out of the closet.
My name is Jenny Apuzzo. In 1969, I was in the convent. I was in the Sisters of Charity. And when Stonewall hit the press, it hit me with a bolt of lightning. It was as if I had an incredible release of my own outrage at having to sequester so much of my life. I made my way down. I seem to recall in subsequent nights being down on the, you know, kind of just in the periphery looking, observer, clearly an observer, clearly longing to have that courage to come out. And it was a matter, as I recall, it was only a matter of weeks before I left the convent and started a new life.
I'm Henry Baird. In 1969, I was in the U.S. Army, a Specialist 3 stationed at Long Binh Post near Saigon in Vietnam. I remember I was having lunch in the Army mess, reading the Armed Forces news summary of the day. And there was a short paragraph describing a riot led by homosexuals in Greenwich Village against the police. And my heart was filled with joy. I thought about what I had read frequently, but I had no one to discuss it with. And secretly within myself, I decided that when I came back stateside, if I should survive to come back stateside, I would come out as a gay person. And I did.
For those of us in public morals, after the Stonewall incident, things were completely changed from what they had previously been. They suddenly were not submissive anymore. They now suddenly had gained a new type of courage. And it seemed as if they didn't care anymore about whether they were whether their identities were made known. We were now dealing with human beings.
My name is Jim Forat, and I'm in the mid-60s, along with Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin. I was one of the founders of the Yippie movement. I remember on the third night of the riots, there was this meeting called by Mattachine Society at St. John's Church on West on Waverly Place. We went, and Randy Wicker was running the meeting.
For 10 years, I've been going on television as Randy Wicker, the respectable homosexual dressed in dark suit and tie, explaining to people that most homosexuals look like everybody else and behave like everybody else. And when Stonewall began happening, you had chorus lines of Queens kicking their heels up at the police, and bonfires burning in the corner trash baskets and throwing bricks and stones at the police. I was horrified because this violated everything that we thought of as responsible behavior, that this was not the way respectable citizens behaved.
Evelyn Hooker was a sociologist, I believe. Randy had introduced her, and she got up, and she suggested that we should have a candlelight march, that we should turn the other cheek because gay people were really different, we were really nice, and we had to show how nice we were and stop all this rioting because people were going to get hurt. I remember I stood up and I said, no, we are not going back. And people felt the same thing I felt. And we marched out of that room, and that was the night that the Gay Liberation Front was born.
Today I live in a senior citizen apartment building. What's different now is that I can be free. I have a daughter who's a senior citizen, and my son is 58. They know about my homosexuality. My three grandchildren in their 30s know about their grandmother. I have a great-granddaughter who at the age of 10 learned that Grandma Jerry was a lesbian, and she thought that was most interesting. And yet I still don't have the personal courage to not care if these yentas in the building know that Jerry's a lesbian.
Well, I retired from the police department in 1976. 20 years have passed. I'm going to be 70 in a few months. I still don't know the answers. I would still like to know the answer. I would like to know whether I was wrong, whether I was right in ever thinking that there was a difference, and ever thinking that maybe you shouldn't trust a homosexual because something is missing in his personality.
The archives of lesbian culture, which surrounds us now and was created 4 years after Stonewall, owes, at least for my part, its creation to that night and the courage that found its voice in the streets. That night, in some very deep way, we finally found our place in history. Not as a dirty joke, not as a doctor's case study, not as a freak, but as a people.
Remembering Stonewall was engineered by Spider Blue. It was produced by David Isay with a grant from the Pacifica National Program Fund. I'm Michael Shirker.
Today I'm a 38-year-old drag man. I can keep my long hair, I can pluck my eyebrows, and I can work wherever the hell I want. And I'm not going to change for anybody. If I change, then I feel that I'm losing what 1969 brought into my life. And that was to be totally free.
How can I ever close the door and be the same as I was? before. Darling, no, no, I can't anymore. It's too late.
Homophobia, heterophobia, especially our feminine men. You know, if you're the impersonators, we have Stonewall. Just love yourself and a light of love. And remember, support your local community activities. This is 90.1 After Hours. Without you, there would be no us.
Give me, give me, give me. Jenny Mile.
It's a shallow existence, but oh yeah, I need it.
Lots of queer music.
Yes, very much so. Lots of good stuff. We started off with Dance, Dance, Dance by Chick. And then we had...
That's off that Studio 54 album?
Exactly. Then I did some Deviant Ingredient by the B-52s.
We had a little a minute and a half thing from Trené Chardon. Trené is not with us anymore. He died of AIDS. He was a female impersonator here in Houston. And every about once or twice a year, Trené came on the show. And he was really good at giving the speech on be yourself and live your dreams, because that's exactly what he did. He was a very talented singer, and he could... what he did on stage was Tina Turner, and just about as good as Tina Turner, too. He was really, really talented. And he, since we had him on so very often, he had a loyalty to KPFT. And one night he came on with a couple of girls who were his backup singers, and he did that little piece. And I really like that "Gimme, Gimme, Gimme, Gimme" KPFT right at the end. That was a total surprise. They did it live here in the studio.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So, and before that, all of that, we had the Stonewall tape, Remembering Stonewall.
Stonewall interview,
which was done 20 years ago. Here it is, the 40th anniversary of Stonewall. That tape was done 20 years ago, interviewing people who were actually there. And their reactions, how they felt during Stonewall and how they feel now, which in many cases was quite different. Sylvia Rivera, which one of the headliners in that, oh yeah, one of the headliners in that,
oh
that tape and at Stonewall, went on
really now
to be a big promoter of homeless transgenders. And had a name, was known all over the United States as someone who championed the rights of homeless transgenders.
And occasionally feared.
Which was pretty good, considering that in 1969, during Stonewall, the word transgender hadn't even been invented yet. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Whew.
So, yeah, that was.
Do you want to include that one song on the...
our mix CD? I don't think so. No. Chris is looking at different kind of music to put together on the CD that we will be playing going down Westheimer next week.
Where's Pop You in the Pooper?
And he's coming up with all kinds of titles that I'm saying no to.
Yep.
One of them is...
Da Vinci's Project. Enormous Penis.
Enormous Penis, yes. Which is a very cute song.
However,
it's peppy.
It's peppy. But yes. I don't think that is Parade caliber.
Oh, come on now, Jimmy.
What about Como de Gusta My Pinga?
No, that
Detachable Penis.
Detachable Penis.
Hey.
Another one of
only
my
favorites. Only half the crowd will understand the title to that one.
And Detachable Penis is one of those that was banned from the station way back when, but we could play it now.
Really?
We could play it now, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And no, Pop You in the Pooper is not a good number to play during the parade route.
So
I guess
party pooper.
Hearing Proud and We Are Family.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
No.
Chris won't do it, though. I like that kind of stuff. I like the real schmaltzy stuff for parade.
I have a copy of It's Raining Men at home.
Oh, yes.
I Will Survive.
Smack Them Christians Down.
No. Mm-hmm. No, no, no.
Will you quit being such a party pooper already?
Yes, please.
I just, yeah. You know...
Kind of like my sister-in-law said when she got married and I told her I was giving one of the toasts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm performing live. I can bring whatever the hell I want and do whatever.
I get it. But when you're going down the parade route, for the most part, if you're on an even flow... The audience, the people on the sidelines, hear you for maybe 15 to 30 seconds. They hear you coming, you're there, and you're gone. And that's the amount of music that they get to hear. And when you're playing something like We Are Family or something, everybody knows, they start dancing and having a good time.
And then they start coming out in the street.
Pop You in the Pooper, I don't think we want to give them that idea right there on the parade route.
Why not? It'd be fun to watch.
Not to put too fine a point on this, but at
so
least half the... half the crowd already has that idea. As a matter of fact, that's their plans for after the
pride
parade.
Pity.
Just saying.
We don't want to enable them to do it sooner than that.
No.
There are a lot of
why not? I want to watch it.
I'll enable.
Free porn.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right.
That's okay. What the internet's for. That's
we are family. Bum, 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 bum.
Please, they'll be lucky.
I thought we played Queer Artist.
There'll be some people who'll be lucky if they make it off of Westheimer before they go at it.
Yes, I know.
Single Scissor Sisters, Frustrated Housewives.
Which one is that?
Boys Like Me.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a little Naked Highway. Definitely some J. Arsenault in there.
Mm-hmm.
Some Big Nug. Kevin Cahoon.
We get some Pansy Division in there.
Kevin Cahoon. Yes.
Get some Queen in there.
I like.
Yeah.
His doll is fun.
Mm.
How old
is it? I was going to say to perform that one for like Toys for Tots special towards the end of the year.
Cute.
Just curious, is Pansy Division collecting Social Security yet? I mean...
Careful! Careful! John Ginoli has just written a book about... He's not that much older than you, honey.
Boy, drugs will do nasty things to you.
He is somewhere between 40 and 45.
Bitch, I ain't at 40 yet.
Merlin is.
Hello. That would be my room.
Anyway.
I think Merlin has just had about 41.
More than you are.
John Ginoli just wrote a book about life in on the road in a queer rock band. So... And he's got some very clever stories. And we do have a Father's Day song, don't we?
Oh, I got a couple I use for Father's Day.
What was one of those?
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
It was a double feature of questioning.
Yeah.
It was, you know, like the son asking the father,
mm-hmm.
Oh, daddy, when you were in jail, were you anybody's bitch?
That's nice.
And the other one was returned... from Music Bear, it's Hey Boy, Are You Gay?
I love this. It's just the wholesomeness just gets to you.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't it, though?
Get you right there.
Get you right there.
If there was any more schmaltz, we'd rubbing ourselves up with chicken fat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we'll save that for next week.
Okay. Great.
We'll do it in front of Katz's, you know.
I'll bring the Crisco.
Because if there's any place for schmaltz, it's in front of Katz's.
How about Johnny, Are You Queer? We could play that.
Queer? Yes.
Actually, we do a couple different sets. I do that with combine it with another song.
Okay.
Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun?
That's my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
It's not close to the holidays, so we can't play I Saw Daddy Kissing Saturday.
No,
not this time.
No.
Sorry. So, are we going to go to a piece of music or talk about something or what?
Well, I can put on a piece of music, or do we want to talk some more?
Oh, I think I really want to hear the Father's Day song he wants to play.
The song.
So
we got to screen it first.
Well,
anything for Roundtable tonight?
I don't know.
I don't know.
The screen went blank.
We got 20 minutes.
The screen did go blank.
There it goes. Mm-hmm. It was just a screensaver.
Oh.
You don't know what that is, do you, Jimmy?
Yes, I do.
Yes, if this comes up with penises.
Of course. Of course.
Detachable peni. I got a friend of mine that...
But he did have a string of beads with those.
My detachable peni is stored in the nightstand.
That's
you mean you haven't donated it to GCAM yet?
No.
You haven't lost it and had to buy it back off a blanket?
I wouldn't worry about him donating it to GCAM. I'd worry about it being donated to the Smithsonian.
Hey!
Museum of Natural History?
It's not that.
Yeah, that too.
Is it one of those plug-the-wall jobs?
No,
I told you before, it was steam power.
You know,
No, that would be the Museum of Unnatural History.
I come by my reputation.
Fair and square.
Yes, I do.
Absolutely. And proudly.
I remember when I was barely a teenager, probably not even a teenager yet.
Most people can't remember that.
He already had four in his mouth.
No, it wasn't that. I'm going to tell you a story that's going to surprise you.
Go for it.
I was at my grandmother's.
This can't end well.
My grandmother and grandfather, on my father's side, really enjoyed living life.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoyed a drink or two every now and then. And they had some friends over, and they were all feeling no pain.
Oh, no.
When my grandmother...
This isn't going too well, is it?
No, this isn't going to end well.
Whips out a present that my grandfather had made for her.
Oh, my God.
He carved it out of a solid chunk of rubber.
Good night, folks. That's all. Good night, kids.
But that's all, folks.
Yes, it was a dildo.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you see, I never had a chance.
No.
The term WTM.
F-I?
There's an F in there. Yeah. We just can't say that word on the air.
That's an FCC no-no.
Yeah.
That's an FCC no-no.
Bothered.
But yeah. It's definitely in this story.
Yes. Way too much
Foxtrot information.
Well, you see,
FCC information.
And let me tell you how young I was. I saw the thing and I didn't know what it was.
And he wanted to play with it anyway.
And it was several years later that I realized, oh. Oh, my.
You had an Edith moment.
Yes, I did.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
That was it.
Let's remember how far back this was. This might have been around the time that a certain Russian was banging his shoe on a on a podium.
Stop.
Anyhow.
Was it a Russian or was it Jesus?
I don't know. What was his hurry?
It was probably...
Well, somebody was getting nailed.
It was probably the very late 50s.
Yeah.
God. My.
My parents got married in 1950.
Is that a fact?
Yes.
I was 2 years old. How do you like that? Okay. Where are we?
We got 14 minutes until the show's over.
Oh,
so what
my
we got?
Goodness.
Give or take.
Is Zydeco Pasale?
Yes.
They're here.
They're here.
They're
oh,
in
good.
The house.
Okay.
They're in the house.
Okay.
They're
hanging in early.
Stop. is there like
I can't believe it's almost Pride
no nasty
week again.
Stories?
It really isn't. I'm surprised. I've had a couple.
You know, Chris, go to the.
Oh, hold on. Damn,
Chris, go to the Chronicle that and look up this story about a 14-year-old exotic dancer in Corpus Christi. Yes,
let's not do that story this week.
14.
Seventh grader, no less.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, she. I read a little bit about that. She was working in a strip club. And now the strip club is suing her and her family
for
getting them in trouble.
Misrepresentation.
Did she falsify her documents about her age?
I guess.
I think my favorite... I bet with their help.
You know, I'm suddenly reminded that earlier today I was watching the show World's Dumbest Criminals.
I love that show.
God.
I could do without telling you Hardy.
Yeah. You know. Okay.
She never has anything original or funny to say.
You would think that the young person would be in enough, and said family would be in enough deep doo-doo.
Mm-hmm.
As in,
but look at the people who were on that show.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
They've all had their problems with police officers.
Yeah. Yes, I took note of that. Matter of fact, I mentioned that when we were talking about it.
Yes,
that,
you did.
That has anybody here noticed? And a couple of the people here, I have to say, had no idea who Leif Garrett was.
Are you kidding?
Oh, my God.
Yes, I'm old enough to remember when Leif Garrett was actually pretty.
Yeah. I remember
and had
hearing
hair.
About him.
And had lots of hair.
I remember hearing about him on the Recovery Channel. I mean, VH1.
yes.
All right, I got a couple of things.
Okay.
What right. you got, Chris?
What we got for 7 minutes?
First thing I got to pull out, I mentioned this.
Pull it out.
I mentioned earlier to the group we're meeting. How many of you have seen those Burger King commercials where they got that kind of cute guy dressed up as Whopper Jr.?
Yeah.
Well, I did a little research.
Mm-hmm.
Leave it to Chris.
Did you find pictures of his Whopper?
Well, no, but let's just put it this way. The tomato's not the only fruit in that costume.
Woo-hoo!
Awesome. He's adorable,
he's a gay actor.
Too.
Yes.
Well, he's now performing in California in the play The Graduate.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, wow.
So he's actually a serious actor.
Does he have the Dustin?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So he goes from having these two women molest his buns on television.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, having an older woman molest his buns in a play.
Hey, man, I'll take that Burger King money.
Hello.
Right now.
Right now. Hello.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying adieu to the official after-hours photographer. Paul is leaving. Paul is leaving the building.
Good night, Paul.
Good night, Paul.
And maybe if he's lucky, he'll get some sleep between now and Pride Night.
We certainly hope so. How about that Senator Ensign?
Hold on, we got rid of the visual. Profiles in the sanctity of marriage.
He does that almost as well as your Sunday thing.
Yeah, he nailed
the money's on the table,
worker.
Chocolate.
Senator John Ensign
of Nevada. Is considered a rising star. Yeah, what part rising?
Just as a campaign worker.
Acknowledged an extramarital affair with a former campaign staffer who was married to one of the lawmaker's former legislative aides.
Hey, Chris, you missed a word in that sentence.
Well, it's not
rising porn star.
Please, no. No one wants to see that.
Anyhow,
really.
Moving on.
The porn for old people.
Hilarious part about this is... this guy who's a double adulterer, because basically he slept with a married woman that wasn't his wife, so he ruined two marriages with this little bit.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he slept with a man that wasn't his wife.
And both of these people work for him.
Yes.
And while... I've been following this on Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. While she was having the affair with him, her salary doubled. Hello.
What a
Can
shock.
You say hush,
well,
buddy?
She was doing two jobs.
Yeah.
She was doing her senatorial work and doing a blow.
Yeah.
Well, blow me down.
Back in September 2007, Father Ensign here called then Senator Larry Craig embarrassing after Craig was arrested in a men's restroom and pled guilty to disorderly conduct. Ensign played the leading role in an unsuccessful effort to force Craig into resigning from the Senate immediately.
And while he was doing that, he was having the affair.
Wow. Yeah.
He was boning up on his campaign.
You know,
hello,
these guys...
Hot. This is Kettle.
These people really just make me want to pop a blood vessel somewhere.
This is the same guy went after Clinton.
Yep.
Like I said,
go
hello,
on.
Pot. Yeah. This is Kettle.
He's going to become a teacher.
You know, against all, he was against gay marriage, and apparently he's not too really strong about his own marriage or other people's marriage.
When you have an affair behind your wife's back, it's not called swinging. It's called adultery.
Adultery.
Apparently all this came to light when his other woman's other hubby got a little upset and tried to get some money out of it. So that was a very interesting story I've seen come up there.
And that story has changed.
You know,
The story was that he was going to be blackmailed, which is why he came out with it.
Yeah.
That story has changed now to actually the woman and her husband were going to go to the media and tell that the media about the affair, so he decided to jump in there first.
Oh, party pooper.
So, you know, not only isn't he a big adulterer, he's a big fat liar.
It's amazing how many people suddenly decide to announce the things they are or have done right around the time they find out they may end up on the front page the next morning.
And, well, and this guy is the number four person in the Republican Party.
Not for much longer.
They can't afford to get rid of him. They need everybody they can get.
Yes, well, you know, if they
got voted off the island.
If they just would stop with this flaming hypocrisy that just this is what gets me. They rant and they rave about all of the stuff that we're supposed to have done and all the how we're the horrible thing in the universe, and then they spout this and then they pull this BS. Oh God, just makes my head hurt.
Well, here's a story to make you feel good about a politician. Manila, Philippines. The mayor of a sleepy town in the Bataan province has been charged with prostitution and lewd show for allegedly paying some 40 teenage boys to play basketball in their underwear.
My favorite way to watch it.
Awesome.
That made Jimmy turn around.
The lawyer said the mayor's camp lured the boys to play basketball in the town plaza in exchange for 200 pesos per shoot and 500 to 1,000 if they would do it only in their underwear.
Per shoot?
The basketball.
The boys gave it because they offered money in a town that captured was the event was captured on cell phone video cameras. The boys said they were just hanging around when someone approached them, telling them the mayor was hosting a basketball event and the final shoot would get a 1,000 peso. That's prostitution. The mayor has denied the charge. He said they were already playing in their underwear when he arrived in the town.
That's modeling.
They undressed voluntarily. I told them to stop and even gave them 500 peso to get dressed.
Sure.
You probably gave 500 pesos to get even farther undressed.
He says this is all politically motivated because this event occurred in April 2008. Cutesy little story. And more homosexuality. Apparently, it's bad enough that we corrupt the children.
Mm.
We're corrupting the penguins and other animals.
Oh,
ooh, hey.
Again.
In a paper, in the paper Trends in Ecology and Evolution, they suggested that homosexuality among animals may be vital to the survival of the species. The variety and ubiquity of same-sex sexual behavior in animals is impressive, wrote the paper's author Nathan Bailey and Marlene Zook. Many thousands of instances of same-sex courtship, pair bonding, and copulation have been observed in a wide range of species, including mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, insects, mollusks, and nematodes. Hot nematode on nematode action.
Kinky.
It's been observed a lot. It took a long time to put it in an evolutionary context.
Sorry, non ecologists out there.
For traditional Darwinism, the notion of animals indulging in such behavior that will not result in procreation may seem confounding. Same thing with Republicans, so how does that... However, Bailey and Zook have argued in many cases gay behavior, in fact, supports the species and can improve the chances for survival. For instance, a third of all bonded latent albatrosses live in all-female couples. Albatross lesbians.
Fly lesbian seagull.
Helps the colony, which has far more female than male birds, because the females will share the parenting while the males carry out the opportunistic mating. Just like a straight man wanting to watch the lesbians get it on. However, homosexual behavior is sometimes simply a case of mistaken identity.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Sure.
Oh, wait, it gets better. Fruit flies may court other males because they're lacking a gene that enables them to discriminate between the sexes. Whether it is because of group bonding, sensual pleasure, mistaken identity, or adaptive parenting, the study supports the notion that gay behavior is universal across the animal world. Earlier this month, there was a report of the gay penguin couple living in a German zoo that were rearing a chick together. One of the four gay couples at Brehmer Zoo, Zee and Wilplunk, were handed an egg by a staff after it appeared to be rejected by its actual parents. In April, a member of Poland's Law and Justice Society criticized the zoo for acquiring an elephant that might be gay.
And somewhere, out there in the other world, Darwin is laughing his butt off.
Oh, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. He does have a good excuse for this. Okay, Poznan Zoo in the west side of the country is home to Nino, the elephant. Councillor Michael Grace told local media the animal preferred male company would have probably not procreate, wasting huge amounts of the government's money. We did not pay 37 million zloty, 7.6 million British pound, for the largest elephant house in Europe to have a gay elephant live there. But imagine how well he could redecorate it with his own poo and straw.
Yeah. And keep the other males so happy.
Mm. I know, right?
Give him some paints that he could decorate with that snout. With,
you had
with
some
his trunk.
Music you wanted to go to?
Yes, sir, I did.
So let's wrap it up, boys and girls. This is the beginning of Pride Week.
Yay! Happy Pride.
We're going to wrap it up with, if you could read my mind, and then do our PSAs.
Be back next week. We get to the Pride Parade. Make sure if you come down to the Montrose, it's pridehouston.org to find out all the information about the Pride Parade next weekend. Be careful where you park because you may not find your car when you come back.
We'll see you next week. Hot, sweaty, and
smelly.
There we go.
It's election season at KPFT. Nominations are now open for the KPFT local station board, with voting beginning in late August. You may only vote with an official ballot that KPFT will mail to members who are current as of July 15th. If you're already a member, please make sure your mailing information is up to date. If you're not currently a member but you would like to vote, you will need to join by July 15th. Likewise, if you're a KPFT volunteer, please confirm your contact information for the upcoming elections. For membership, please call 713-526-4000, extension 314, during regular office hours, or send an email with your name, address, and phone number to membership@kpft.org. For volunteers, please call 713-526-4000, extension 316, during regular office hours, or send an email with your name, address, and phone number to volunteer@kpft.org. Complete election, membership, and volunteer information is available at kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Live Oak Friends Meeting invites you to spend an evening with singer-songwriter Hank Wojcie. That little Quaker meeting place up in the high.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.